you first came up here. Were you born here?
No, I was born, started off in Clarksville, Tennessee.
That's a long
time. November 8th, 1913. And my folks moved to Missoula in 1917.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I spent most of my life in Missoura,
mm-hmm.
growing up.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get to Alaska?
Well, horses somehow got made the connection between moving from Missoura to Longview, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people who established the town of Longview,
mm-hmm.
the Combs, were the people that had to, that we dealt with. But Long Bell, her father was the Mr. Bell of Long Bell Lumber
mm-hmm.
Company.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought for a young couple that Longview was the place to go. So in the Depression times, when I had my first job in my whole life for $12.50 a week.
Golly, what was that doing?
I was a big clerk for Montgomery Ford. How about that? But anyhow, we moved to Longview and worked there for a while. And Bob was editor of the Long Bell magazine, and that took in all the operations all over the United States. I mean, it covered the whole operations. And I worked for the Port of Longview there. And somehow through friends and a can of White King salmon, we made the Alaska connection, because we got off on the subject of Alaska. And during the war, you had to work at some type of government job up here, because that's when they were evacuating people from Alaska.
Oh, I see. They weren't
so crazy. No, you couldn't come. I mean, they were shipping the women and kids out. So mm-hmm. the only way you could get up here would be to work on some project that was a
mm-hmm.
government deal. And I say government, I'm talking military,
mm-hmm.
really.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, you were stuck for a year, meaning you stayed on this job for a year. And we just never went back. That was, the end of 1942, I was in Alaska waters, but we actually arrived, I think, on the 1st of January, 1943. And
mm-hmm.
it's been home ever since. And that was Seward. Then we lived in Seward, Anchorage for a very short while, Whittier for about, while they built the tunnel there to bring the cargo in, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it was necessary during the war. And then from Whittier we came to Fairbanks, and that was the last of June in 1946.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been here ever since.
And how did you get started in dogs?
Well, that was started way back in Missouri. Bob was my husband.
Mm-hmm.
He was loved to hunt, and he had bird dogs and he had hound dogs, and that was one of the things that I agreed to when we got married. I was, besides the love, honor, and obey stuff, I agreed never to object to the number of dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And in Anchorage, I think somebody took us for a sled ride, and the bug bit. She gave us two dogs. We brought them to Fairbanks. And we were right in the thick of it. I mean, the dog races had just been started again after the war, and they were closed out during the war. And that first fall, I was in the dog race.
Did you were the very first woman to race, were you?
I know. I think there were other women that was racing. We had there was a little woman's race
mm-hmm.
that year, and like you could even drive a team of three dogs if you wanted to. It was just an 8 mile. They didn't pay very much attention to women at that time in dog racing, but it was great. I don't know. The paper got hold of it and they played it up, the dark horse entry and all this. And I come out with my five dogs and a little bow of ribbon in my hair. I felt mighty important. And I took off, and oh man, it was a nightmare. I didn't know anything about running dogs. They took me out in the deep snow, and I was riding in the sled backwards and trying to get out of a mess I'd been in, and almost missed my sled. And when I come back to the starting line, I made it all the way around. Oh, the crowd was gone, and just the timekeeper was there. But that started it, and then I ran dogs for about 18 years, and I think I was the first woman to ever. We have a preliminary race season that builds up to the North American Championship, and it's very competitive, and I'm sure looking back that I was the first woman to ever win a preliminary race.
Yeah.
And I eventually won the North American Championship. But my real love of dogs was training and, you know, not the competition as much, just training and working with dogs.
And you were telling me that one time you had 116 or?
104.
104 dogs.
Sure did take a lot of cooking.
Oh, yeah. You must have spent a lot of time doing it, fishing meals and whatever.
But it was fun.
Oh, yeah. Life is fun, yeah. And you were doing what you wanted to do and loving it here?
Oh, yeah. Last is home.
Mm-hmm.
It's really home. And the people that you've met.
Mm-hmm.
Up here, I was just thinking this morning that I was thinking about the something on TV that made me. I think it was the word was igloo. It was one of these questions, and the woman won the prize when she said that's something the Indians live in. Well, I always thought the Eskimos were the ones. Lived in the igloos, and I found out they didn't even do it.
Yeah,
but to know some of my best and closest friends have been the Native people.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a compassion of love for people and their own. They encompass so much that I just wish everybody could feel a little of what I had the privilege to see in Alaska's own people, really.
Mm-hmm.
But then, see, I grew up real horsey, not doggy. My husband was doggy. I was horsey, and I've seen a big old range horse from Canada that come up for the rodeos sell for. Jiminy, almost $1,000. $800 and some, I think.
Because there weren't horses here?
There wasn't any horses here. It's all, well, the Busbys had. You know,
yeah,
at one time.
Yeah, they had a lot of, yeah.
Well, Elk's brother was a stage driver.
Mm-hmm.
And he died about probably 12, 14 years ago. And he was the last of the stage drivers that was living when he died. But there's still some old double-enders around here, and you know, but now the whole country's full of blooded, fine riding horses, and of all types, quarter horses, thoroughbreds, ponies, saddlebreds, and everything. Lots of changes.
Lots of changes. Mm-hmm. But these were a few things. You at one time, you were very involved with dogs. So you had a trailer court and a greenhouse. Is that
what you did? We bought a homestead about somewhere around 1950, I think. Oh, at 6.5 mile Richardson Highway, and we eventually built a home there. And we were in a wholesale photo finishing business here, and now you can get your pictures in an hour. But we started the first one-day service in Fairbanks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we did the work for the military bases, and then for the different stores in town, mm-hmm. we picked up and different dealers. We were in that business for 18 years. And then the tourist season began to really develop in Alaska. So the pressure was on build a camp accord, to build a place for these people to stay. So we finished our court in 1967. And that was just shortly before the flood.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of killed the season for us that summer. But we were able to, we were near enough complete that we were able to just throw the thing wide open, and we kept people free that were stranded up here as tourists. And we had a place for them to sleep that was dry, mm-hmm. water that was pure,
mm-hmm.
And we stayed in that business until, actually, it's still active under another name today, but my husband died in April of 77. And I was working, and it was too much for me to do both ends. So I sold the house in 1980, the last of 81 or the first part of 82. And the people are still running the court today. Then we started a nursery with the camper court, and then a seed business.
Wow.
And by working through the extension service at the University mm-hmm. of Alaska, we bought seed all over the world in bulk mm-hmm. and repackaged them.
Mm-hmm.
The seed that had been proven to be for this particular climate. We had seeds that, for instance, that was good for the Juneau area, mm-hmm. but Alaska's divided into
yeah.
different
yeah.
different
yeah.
groups.
Yeah, that's very exciting, isn't it?
But we started that.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent quite a sizable sum of money developing the business. And then when Bob died, see, it wasn't that I wasn't interested.
It was too much.
It was too much.
Yeah, yeah, I can.
And by then I was getting up in years too.
Mm-hmm.
So the seed business was the same type of seed business. He didn't buy us out. He simply took the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that we had already given it enough publicity that it was very helpful to him. I hope it was. And that's the Denali Seed Company. That's it today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But like the European cucumbers, even that seed's not, it doesn't come from Alaska. And then this big cabbage that we grow was developed in Japan.
Oh, this is fascinating that I didn't know, yeah.
It's supposed to be about a 14-pound cabbage in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But it grows huge in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just all kinds and manners of seeds that you just get from all over the world.
Oh,
some of the catalogs are not even printed in English. It's, you know.
Mm-hmm. You just knew what to get that would grow here. Right?
Well, it took a lot of study mm-hmm. and a lot of work. It
yeah.
didn't come, it didn't come easy. It took a long time to establish, and I think it's a real shame that it was a dream that Bob had, and it's a shame that he couldn't,
yeah.
you know, see it carried on, because it did. It was good, and the vegetables were good, and it was the help that we got from the university was just terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Just
mm-hmm.
terrific.
God, I had no idea you'd been involved with so much of the last. I mean, and done so much.
Well, that's probably just a little portion of it, but Alaska's been good to us.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some people that come here, maybe they had to come here for one reason, or maybe they were transferred here for a while, and they seem to take a certain satisfaction out of not messing around town, I mean not coming to town, or not seeing the country for what it, you know, mm-hmm. is. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a shame that they can't all just really embrace it. And many people have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of the people that have been up here in the military, I can remember there was a Major Grace Hughes. She was in charge of the commissary and the post exchange. And they had a ball. They loved every minute of the time mm-hmm. they spent here. And a lot of people do. And of course, a lot of the people that live here today are ex-military, or they come up here and had a job and then they want to stay.
Well, do you think living here, maybe the hardships or the type of really influences you a lot, or do you think that people come, some people are influenced for the better or the good, or do you think that, do you think people influence the land, or the land influences the people, or?
Well, and I want to answer one question first. I don't think Alaska is a hardship. I think Alaska has been so good to so many people
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that they never found anyplace else in the whole United States. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I know it's been good to us.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, when my foot first stepped on the soil of Alaska, I was hired at $187.50 a month, which was unheard of wages at that time.
Mm-hmm. What year was that? 43? Mm-hmm.
43. Mm-hmm. The first part of 43. We sailed out of Seattle around Christmas time of 42, but we actually landed at Seward on the 1st of January of 43. I saved money on that $187.50. Of course, that was your base pay, and we worked 7 days a week, so we made more than that. But at the time I left on Longview, Washington, I had the best job in town for a woman
mm-hmm.
for a transfer company. It was a trucking outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a bowling alley, they had apartment houses, they had a cafe, they had an interstate trucking line, and kind of complicated bookkeeping. And I was the bookkeeper there, and I made $125 a month. There was no salary in that whole town that equaled that. I heard someone made 100, but 125 was.
Do you think things have changed? Would you see changes for women? I mean, you were earning the best salary for a woman at that time. You were the first woman, one of the very first to get involved in dog mushing, and certainly the first to win the Great Northern. Do you see changes for women and opportunity in Alaska? This is an aside. I mean,
Well, I think perhaps they always probably had a little edge up here
mm-hmm.
to some states, but the world has really opened up to women. Sometimes it almost scares me
mm-hmm.
because I'm a little old-fashioned, and I I think a woman should make equal for what she does, equal pay if she can do the job as well. But I guess my name will be Mud, but I actually think that sometimes they've overstepped themselves, because I still think that a woman should be feminine
mm-hmm.
and that she should look up to a man
mm-hmm.
to the extent that she needs to lean on him. We all need somebody to lean on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that they should ever go so far as to strip a man of his dignity.
Well, I don't think any human being should be stripped of dignity.
I don't think anyone should be either.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only thing that scares me,
mm-hmm.
has scared me about the women's
yeah.
slip, is
yeah.
don't take it too far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think
to be okay
could,
doesn't mean you're not okay, and I think this is a hard thing to handle.
Yeah, well, I think women are brilliant, and but I think each of us has our own place
mm-hmm.
in the human race, a man and a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you answered the question when you said the dignity. We've got to keep our dignity.
It's individual society. Yeah.
But I, when I see young people, and I just think about what all Alaska has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the day of the homestead is gone. But then they have other things. They have home sites that occasionally come up on the market, and they have places that you bid on. You bid on some property, but if you build a road, if you build a house, if you build a barn, somehow that goes back into part payment. I don't really understand all of it, but I do know that there's lots of opportunities.
Oh, I think so too.
Yeah.
Do you think in your life it was a matter of creating opportunity as much as taking advantage of whatever came along? Would you say that part of what makes your life successful is your ability to create an opportunity or your enthusiasm? What would you put down?
I think that's true. I think you have to create your own opportunities no matter where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly Alaska offered more, and it was easier to do your part than a lot of places. But you can't just sit and down and expect the world to come dump money in your lap. You've got to have the desire.
Mm-hmm.
And use some intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, everybody's going to make mistakes, but learn by them and don't let it get you down.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I look at life, all over. But somehow, it just seems like that things can be a little bit better and a little bit richer for a person here than so many places.
Oh, I think so.
It's not that I don't love Missouri, where I was raised. And I have been back to Tennessee, where I was born, but I was pretty small when we left there. And I lived a little bit of my life in Texas because my father bought a farm. And man, in 1917, you know, when it didn't rain in Missouri, and the crops was all you lived on. You know, you had to go someplace. So Daddy went to Texas. And at that time, Texas was booming with oil. Wages wasn't high. But so oil, in a way, has touched my life twice. It helped my father pay for the farm and raise his family.
Mm-hmm.
And then here it comes back, and I see what oil has done for Alaska. And I went back to Texas, where in around Kilco, Texas, and everybody knows about the college there in Kilgore and their little girls that perform at the football games and all of this. And I remember the old dirt roads where you could almost lose a car in the mud driving to Kilgore. And I see now all the green grass and the wells are all capped off. They're pumping.
Mm-hmm.
And the cattle, if you please, grazing right, almost right under the arm of the pumping well.
Mm-hmm.
And people criticize what the oil is going to do for the wildlife and so forth. And I've seen it from start to finish in Texas, and I know that it's not going to kill or hurt your wildlife.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We do most of that with guns or something to that effect, but the actual, we're not going to stop the migration of the caribou, and we're not going to stop any of it. They may move a little bit, but look at Creamer's Field.
Mm-hmm.
Here there's bees that land out there now. Well, when Mr. Creamer was farming, they come by the droves. They were just thick in there. And even now, they have to put grain in that field to bring them back. So they will change fields without dying.
Mm-hmm.
And when we used to raise barley and oats out at 6.5 miles, and we had wild crane and we had everything out there, just scares them. We counted 130 crane one time, but they liked the barley.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when we sold that land and the barley wasn't grown anymore, and the birds, they just went to another farmer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So things are not, I mean, they're not as desperate as they sound about wildlife. Oh, I believe in protecting it, but not just because they.
Well, I think it all depends on, and from your standpoint and mine too, we're assuming a basic sense of responsibility and individuals about it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I certainly think that there can be an easy balance on both sides, and you've got to have self protection. But anyway,
but you know, the one thing that has impressed me very much, I mean, impressed me inside, is some of the friends that I made up here. And when I think if anything happened and went wrong, I could depend more on the people that I have met here than back where I come from. Yeah. Yeah. I think that a different breed of cats stay up here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they've toughed it out and so forth, I think that inside of that person is a pretty dedicated person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I don't know how to say it, but it's the kind of people that make life worthwhile, the ones that come up at it a little hard and stayed. Now that's how I really feel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your life has certainly been very extraordinary. Well, can you think of things that might have influenced you one way or another? Did you ever think of what influenced you during life, or
Well, the people you meet are an influence on your life.
Mm-hmm.
Every day.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, without you really knowing it, the people you meet shape your whole life.
Okay, so I don't think you're always aware of what's going on, but you are.
They, mm-hmm. And maybe you influence theirs at the same time, but
mm-hmm.
And I think that's pretty wonderful,
mm-hmm.
because it gives you hope, it gives you dreams.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't possible to spread yourself all over, but through each different person's eyes, there's a different way of life,
mm-hmm.
and your own life is made richer from their life as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Sure.